Welcome to the podcast On Things Above, a weekly discussion and devotion rooted in the Word of God and reaching toward heaven above.
Welcome to episode 6 of On Things Above. With us today is one of our deacons at Southside, Brother Steve Bachmiller. Thanks for joining us, and tell us, what's life like for the Bachmiller family during all of this?
Thank you, Jared. It's good to be here. It's good to be a part of this, and I'm thankful for the opportunity. Things have been going well for the Bachmiller household. Lots and lots of staying at home. We do everything here at home, from working to school to worship service. It's made us appreciate things we didn't appreciate before. The time together as a family, the new routines, like walking around the neighborhood. So far, it's gone really well as far as we're all still getting along. It's gone smoother than I expected, and we've learned to appreciate each other more. So a lot of positives for a bad situation.
In Hebrews 11, the writer gets to something really interesting towards the end of that chapter, and that's when in verse 32 he says, "Time would fail me." And he sort of has this rapid fire list of characters that he throws in right at the last. And the first on that list is the judge of Israel, Gideon. So Steve, let's talk a little bit about why you chose Gideon, and then take us over to sort of his famous moment of faith there in Judges 7.
Okay. So Bubba gave me an option of who was I interested in studying. And I have to tell you, I picked verse 32 because these are not men that I study a whole lot. So I purposely picked it so it would force me to go back and look at it and think about it. Because if you asked me 2 weeks ago, come and tell me why did Barak and why did Gideon make it into the book? And I have to say, let me go back and read Judges one more time before I answer that question, because I don't typically study it like I should. So that's why I chose it, because I wanted to be forced to go back and look. And I'll tell you what, after doing that, it was really exciting, which is what I thought this might happen. It's exciting to go read something you haven't read for a while in the Bible. And there's so many good and neat learning things from just these three chapters in Judges about Gideon that it definitely was worthwhile. So I didn't know how smart the choice would be, but on this side of it, I'm excited I chose that. So you find Gideon in Judges chapter 6, 7, and 8. And like when you're picking multiple choice questions, you throw out the largest, the smallest, and you go with the middle. We're going to start with chapter 7. And chapter 7 is a neat chapter because we're going to jump right into the action in the story of the 300. If it's okay, I want to read a few verses before we discuss Judges chapter 7, verse 1. Then Zerubbabel, that is Gideon, and all the people who were with him, rose early and encamped beside the spring of Herod. And the camp of Midian was north of them by the hill of Moreh in the valley. Then God said to Gideon, "The people with you are too many for me to give the Midianites into their hand, lest Israel boast over me, saying, 'My own hand has saved me.' Now therefore proclaim in the ears of the people, saying, 'Whoever is fearful and trembling, let him return home and hurry away from Mount Gilead.' Then 22,000 of the people returned, and 10,000 remained. And the Lord said to Gideon, 'The people are still too many. Take them down to the water, and I will test them for you there, and any one of whom I say to you, this one shall go with you, and any of whom I say to you, this one shall not go with you, shall not go.' So he brought the people down to the water, and the Lord said to Gideon, 'Everyone who laps the water with his tongue as a dog laps, you shall set him by himself. Likewise, everyone who kneels down to drink, and the number of those who lap, putting their hands to their mouth, was 300 men. But all the rest of the people knelt down to drink water. And the Lord said to Gideon, 'With the 300 men who lapped, I will save and give the Midianites into your hand, and let all the others go, every man to his home.' So the people took provisions in their hands and their trumpets, and he sent all the rest of Israel, every man to his tent, but retained the 300 men, and the camp of Midian was below him in the valley." Well, this sets up our story. We're going to go backwards in a little bit, but in chapter 6, we read about the Midianites oppressing the Israelites, and here God is going to step in and through Midian and these 300 men defeat the Midianites. And it's neat that they start with 32,000. It's kind of interesting how did he get, the Bible doesn't give us all the detail, but I was thinking about logistically, how did he get all of these 32,000 volunteers to show up? My guess is God had a hand in that and getting that done. Gideon did what he could, but I think God had his hand in that. But God said, that's too many, because you'll take credit for it. So he says, send everybody back that's afraid. Now, that's a high percentage of men that were afraid. You lose 22,000, and he's left with just 10,000. If I was Gideon, I'd be a little bit worried. Boy, we lost a lot. The numbers are down. And God said, no, we're not down enough. Let's do it again. And so God comes up with a test. And I don't know what you all think, but I read some things about it where people said that test, the man that lifts the water to his hand, to his face, kept his eye up. So he was careful. He would have been a warrior type. So I'm not sure what you all feel about that. I wonder if that was God had his hand. God chose the 300, or was it really these men were astute enough that 300 of them said, knew not to look down, not to stick your face in the water, but to pull the water up. I'm not sure. I don't know what you guys think of that. Any thoughts?
Well, it just doesn't tell us specifically whether that was arbitrary or if one is more soldiery than the other. I kind of like you. It seems to be more watchful that if you bring the water up to your face, you can still be aware and alert for the enemy.
Right, right. So after, that's a good point, Bubba, that they were watchful, and that's how God was going to separate. So he separated out the 300, and the rest of them go home. I'm kind of curious what Gideon and these 300 men were thinking about how they were going to accomplish this task. But there must have been some bravery, because the 300, if I was part of the 300, I may say, oh, forget this, I'm going home. I'm with the original 22,000 who bailed. But they proceed as they are. And it's interesting that when you drop down, so God tells Gideon to go to the camp, for I've put it in your hand. And he says in verse 10 of chapter 7, he says, if you are afraid to go down to the camp with Pura, your servant, and you shall hear what they say. And afterwards, your hand shall be strengthened to go down against the camp. So God said, if you're afraid, go check and you'll see what you hear. So Gideon goes down, and it's interesting that God said that his hand would be strengthened, because look in verse 12. This is kind of neat. It says, and the Midianites and the Amalekites and all the people of the east lay along the valley like locusts in abundance. Mm-hmm. And their camels were without number, and as the sand that is on the seashore in abundance. It's so neat, the details that the Bible includes. If I'm now down to 300 men, I'm not sure this trip would have caused me to be strengthened. I may be a little extra worried. The odds are not looking very good. But I think that God had a purpose in getting Gideon to put his faith in God, to rely on him. I think you definitely see that pop out there. Verse 13, then it says, Gideon came and a man was telling a dream. And Gideon listens to this dream and realizes it's time to go. It's time to go. He says in verse 15, as soon as Gideon heard the telling of the dream that he heard in its interpretation, he worshiped. And then he went back and he got the troops ready and said, it's time to go. I think it's neat in verse 15, real quickly, it says that he worshiped, which meant he bowed down to God. It's neat to see that's where his priority was, that he understood where this victory, I think that's evidence that he knew where this victory was coming. God made it clear, he's down to 300, he's comparing the 300 to these men that were as locusts, and then it says that he worships. So then Gideon, here's the interpretation of the dream. It says that he go in verse, the end of verse 15, I think it's neat, he says, arise, for the Lord has given the host of Midian into your hands. So Gideon is looked to as a leader, and Gideon's faith that he has in God is shows in that statement. If you think about with us, when the odds are stacked against us to a great degree, what does our faith do? Do we make statements like that? Arise, for God has given us this into our hand. Do we ever say that? I think it's interesting that he said that. He showed that and demonstrated that leadership to the people. So verse 16 gives you a little bit of how the plan is going to go. He divides the men into three companies. He puts trumpets into their hands and empty jars with torches inside the jars. And we're going to find out later what's going to happen. But he tells them, he says, look at me and do likewise. When I come to the outskirts of the camp, do as I do. When I blow the trumpet, I and all who are with me, then blow the trumpets also on every side of the camp and shout for the Lord and for Gideon. So he had a plan and he divided them up. This is an interesting military plan to have this. But he passes that out. And then it says, starting in verse 19, we see the rest of the story. It says, so the Gideon and the 100 men who were with him came to the outskirts of the camp at the beginning of the middle watch, just as they had set the watch, and they blew the trumpets, smashed the jars that were in their hands. Then the three companies blew the trumpets and broke the jars. They held in their left hands the torches, and then their right hands the trumpet to blow, and they cried out, a sword for the Lord and for Gideon. Every man stood in his place around the camp, and all the army ran. They cried out and fled. When they blew the 300 trumpets, the Lord set every man's sword against his comrade and against the army, and the army fled as far as Besheta towards Zerarah, as far as the border of Abel-Meholah by Tabath. And the men of Israel were called out from Naphtali, from Asher, and from Manasseh, and they pursued after Midian. Really neat to see in verse, my favorite part of this this verse is, it says in verse 21, every man stood in his place. They followed that direction, and they Gideon said, the God's given them into our hands. They stood in their place. They blew their trumpets. But then it says, when they blew the 300 trumpets, the Lord set every man's sword against his comrade. Over and over and over again in this story, you see God's hand, and you see where the real victory was. It wasn't that the men needed to be standing in their place, and they needed to follow direction and use the tools that they were given. But who won the victory here? It says that the Lord set every man's sword against his comrade and against all the army. You see God stepping in. God was going to be the one behind the scenes that was going to take care of this army. Yet these men still had to have faith to show up, to stand in their place, yet God gave them the victory. And I think that's really neat that he did that.
Yeah, and to add to that, I'm really intrigued by what we find out in chapter 8, there in verse 4, about how Gideon and the 300, you know, they've kind of routed Midian all through God's doing. And then they pursue them across the Jordan. And so they just had this big fight, this big skirmish go down, and now they cross the Jordan, and it says they were weary yet pursuing. And that phrase has always stood out to me. I think maybe Bubba was the one who pointed out to me one time, but I think that's such a key phrase that, you know, we might be worn out and tired and feel like we're barely hanging on to our faith. Even after these big moments where your faith accomplishes something great, but you get to this moment where you're just exhausted. And even in those times, I'm weary, but I'm still going to keep pursuing and seek out those things that are above. And then it also stands out to me, I guess another thing we find out in chapter 8 is the odds of the battle. We find out that collectively it was about 135,000, I think, that they had gone up against. So it amazes me, like you mentioned, how little this victory had to do with Israel. And for that same reason, that's what makes their faith so incredible. They're outnumbered 450-1. So they couldn't say that they were saved by their own might or their own strength. And there's a very similar idea going on in 2 Kings 6. So let's talk about that passage for a moment.
Yeah, so 2 Kings 6 is another example in the scriptures of a mismatch on paper. Just like in Gideon's situation, you have here two people, Elisha the prophet and his servant, and they're in the city of Dothan, and they're surrounded by the great army of the Syrians or Arameans, depending on which translation you use. And Elisha's servant had the same problem that those 22,000 did in Gideon's original army. And that problem was fear.
And he saw the great army surrounding them and even asked the question in 2 Kings 6, Master, what shall we do? In verse 15. And what the prophet said to him first was, do not fear. It's the same thing that Moses said to the Israelites and then later Joshua to the Israelites. It's the same thing that Nehemiah said to the workers when they were being confronted by their enemies. The same thing Jesus said to his disciples in the boat in the middle of the storm. Do not fear. There's something greater at work here than just what you see. And that's certainly the case with this invisible enemy that we're fighting right now with the coronavirus. And so here's the request that Elisha makes to the Lord. Open his eyes that he may see. And what did he want him to see? That those who are with us are more than those who are with them. With Gideon's army of 300, they were going into battle better equipped with someone greater than any army of man could have. They had God fighting for them. And when this servant's eyes were opened, he saw the mountains full of horses and chariots of fire all around Elisha. We need not fear. It's the other side that's mismatched. When God is on our side, we're always in the majority. Do not fear. Those who are with us are more than those who are with them.
Yeah, and I think there are a lot of moments where we can feel just like those servants or just like the men of Israel who opted out, who became too afraid to stay and fight. There are some obstacles that just seem insurmountable. Maybe it's a trial that hits us really hard or a temptation that we just can't seem to shake. And so we start to feel like there's just no way out, that we're surrounded just like this servant. And that's when we need to see, like you pointed out, that our eyes need to be open to find that the Lord is with us and that with him, it is always the majority. And that's actually exactly what God told Gideon back in Judges chapter 6. We read about Gideon and the 300's victory and this great triumph. But Gideon had a pretty humble beginning. So Steve, take us back to the beginning of his story there in Judges 6.
Okay. And back in Judges chapter 6, the first six verses talk about that the Midianites were oppressing the Israelites and doing all kinds of terrible things. In verse 3, it says, when the Israelites planted crops, the Midianites and Amalekites and the people of the east would come up against them. They would devour the produce. They would leave no sustenance in Israel, no sheep or livestock. They would even bring their own animals in to eat the resource from the land. So you see all these terrible things, and it says the people cried out to the Lord on account of the Midianites, and the Lord sent a prophet to the people of Israel, and God says, I will deliver you. So you fast forward to verse 11, and you see an angel of the Lord comes, and he finds Gideon, who we just read about before Bubba talked about 2 Kings. We read about the fact that he's this mighty man of valor in chapter 7, guiding the 300 men to victory, which we know how he had the victory. It was through God. But look at where he starts off in verse 11. It says that he was beating out wheat in the wine press to hide it from the Midianites. So he is hiding from them so that they can't steal their stuff. And the angel of the Lord appears to him and says, the Lord is with you, O mighty man of valor. It's a very interesting statement for a guy who's hiding. You would think the mighty man of valor would be out there facing off against the Midianites, yet he's in here and he's hiding. And so it's neat that I was reading, some people make points, God sees what we don't see. I don't know that I believe that God saw that he really was a mighty man of valor, because in my opinion, God can take anybody and make them strong. When you have God on your side, it doesn't matter if you're weak. When you have him on your side, you're going to be successful, which is exactly what happens. But not before Gideon throws all kinds of excuses Why me? I'm the my family is the weakest. And not only is my family the weakest, I'm the weakest of the bunch. He viewed himself as I'm the worst of the worst. Don't ask me to do this. But look at verse 16. It's really, really great part of this. And the Lord said to him, I will be with you, and you will strike the Midianites as one man. And he said to him, and if now I found favor in your eyes, show me a sign that it is you who speak with me. So God tells him, I'll be with you. It, just like Bubba said, if you have God on your side, you're going to be victorious. The odds on paper may not look good, but if you have God, it's better. I think about that a lot with this coronavirus, because all of us, we've had several weeks to digest this. But remember back to the first couple weeks as the cases were climbing so fast. I'm sure us three and those that are listening to this podcast can all thought about this. The odds are huge here. When we have had hurricanes, I always feel better because I say we're in bad shape with Harvey flooding or hurricanes. We're in bad shape, but there's a lot of other people where it's nice and peaceful. When's the last time we had any kind of epidemic where it went as far as the planet Earth can go? There's not anything that wasn't touched by it. To me, at times that felt like overwhelming odds. And that's the time where you have to remember, with God, we're going to be okay. And I think we forget that. And I think that's one good thing that might come out of this, that everybody hopefully has that moment where they think, this is it. If we've ever had an insurmountable problem, this is it. Yet we'll overcome because we have God. Something to keep in mind. I take from that, and I think that's really neat in the story. And another thing I want to bring up with this story that I think is really neat is, so you read this and you could focus on Gideon, but I don't know what you guys think, but I think that what jumps off the page in chapters 6 and 7 is the fact that God is there and how neat that is. And you can't help but read this and say, give glory to God. He was patient with Gideon. He allowed Gideon to test him. And yet he stayed with him and gave him the assurances and also gave him some tests to strengthen his faith, to turn this weak man into a mighty man of valor. Like it says in Hebrews chapter 11, 34, that when after it lists those men, it said some were made strong out of weakness, mighty in war, who sent armies to flight. Really, really neat that God was able to do that. He can do that with every one of us, no matter where we are, who we are, how weak we think we are. We need to put our trust in him, because that's the outcome. I feel really encouraged from reading that, especially knowing what we're going through right now.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting to see Gideon's faith develop throughout the story, like you brought out. And I think because of that, it makes him a very relatable character, a very relatable example to us, because we don't always have the kind of faith that runs into battle with, you know, outnumbered 450-1. And even for him throughout, you know, the night before the battle, he's still having to have that reassurance from God. And so it takes time for that kind of faith to develop. And part of it has to do with, I think, when we doubt ourselves and we don't believe in ourselves, not thinking that we can do it. And of course, on our own, we can't. That's kind of the resounding theme throughout the story of Gideon. But ultimately, it's about how we view God. And to steal a point from Bubba's sermon on Sunday, it's just like the song we sing, our God is so big, so strong, and so mighty. There is nothing my God cannot do. And then it ends with, there's nothing my God cannot do for you. So it's something that is personal. The Lord is with you, O valiant warrior. And even in the times where you don't feel like that, when you don't feel like the valiant warrior, the Lord is right there beside you. And with him, you will win the battle. And that brings us to the last passage we want to look at today, and that is 1 Peter 5.
I don't know if y'all remember when Frederick Gray was with us at Southside. He is one of the preachers we support. He preaches in the Tampa area. So we brought him and his family in for a Sunday a few years back. And he preached a sermon that he calls the Gideon Factor. And he did exactly what Steve talked about, where he takes our introduction to Gideon, where God calls him a valiant warrior, seemingly out of nowhere. And the point of the sermon is to show how God can do that for everyone, because he can see your end from the beginning. He knows who you are and who you will become. That reminded me of 1 Peter chapter 5. Now, most of us know verse 8, where he talks about the devil being the roaring lion seeking someone to devour. But the next verse says, "But resist him, firm in your faith, knowing that the same experiences of suffering are being accomplished by your brethren who are in the world." One of the things that gives us strength to fight the devil and to be a valiant warrior in this spiritual war that we're a part of is the knowledge that other people in other places in the world are fighting the devil, and they're being victorious. They're winning the battle. And so when we read about Gideon and his army of 300 being victorious over this great Midianite alliance, we have faith that God will help us do the same in our spiritual warfare. He'll help us defeat the greatest enemy of all, who is the devil, and we can resist him knowing that others are fighting and winning. And so we draw great encouragement, not just from these stories of old and retelling these people in the cloud of witnesses and their stories, but by knowing that our brothers and sisters, not just Southside, but the world over, are doing the same thing, because they're keeping their faith in God and they're becoming mighty in war, valiant warriors, all of them.
Oh, I probably could talk for another hour, but I know we're short on time. But it's been a really good study and a really good encouragement to look at these couple stories from the Bible, and to always remember that God is behind all of us and all our successes, and he's the one that will see us through. Don't ever forget that. I think it's one of the most important things to remember, that with God, he'll strengthen us, he'll confirm us, he'll help us. And we need to put our trust and our faith in him at all times, no matter what the odds are.
We've alluded to it a couple times, but right now there's this crisis around the world that to many seems insurmountable. And it's interesting that just as it seems the world thought that we were so advanced and could overcome any crisis by our own knowledge and ingenuity, we're hit with this virus that we've been calling, that we've all mentioned, the invisible enemy. And it sounds so much, when you put it that way, sounds so much like sin, an invisible enemy that by our own power and by our own might, we could never overcome. And by ourselves, we're outnumbered, just like the 300. We're surrounded like Elisha and the servant. And we're without any hope in that fight. But like we've been talking about all along, with God, nothing is impossible. We have the Almighty fighting for us. We have brothers and sisters all around the world who are enduring and standing firm in the same things. And we have an unshakable and firm foundation of faith that is always the victory. Or as Paul put it in Philippians 4:13, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. So, Steve, thank you again for joining us today. We're glad that you got to study with us for a little bit.
Thank you again for the opportunity. I enjoyed it.
Hey, thanks a lot, Steve. Great seeing you, bud. We have coming up Chuck Durham from College Station, Texas, number 3 in the Southside training program. And he has chosen from Hebrews 11, Isaac.
All right. Well, we're excited for next time to study with Brother Chuck Durham and talk about the faith of Isaac. Thanks, and we look forward to the next episode.